You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Because it's Wednesday, that means it's Draft Wednesday across the Locked On Podcast Network. Go to draft.com or download the Draft app and use the promo code LORockets. And from there, you can play in a real money fantasy basketball draft for free. So as we chat on this Wednesday, the Rockets are a couple hours away from tipping off against the Portland Trail Blazers here at the friendly confines of Toyota Center in downtown Houston, Texas. And I'm sure some of you are wondering when I say that, Ben, why are you recording your daily show before the game? Don't you usually do your game day stuff after in a post-game show? And typically, yes. But once in a while, there's going to be an interview, something that I think is bigger than just one game out of 82. And in my opinion, and hopefully yours as well, I think today will end up being one of those days. That's because I'm going to be joined momentarily by Matt Bullard, the Rockets' lead analyst for TV broadcasts, both home and road. I've been a fan of his for a long time, of course, going back to the 90s when he was a player for the Rockets on those Rudy Tomjanovich teams. But since then, of course, he's become a beloved voice in the Rockets community and really is about the only part of the TV broadcast that is consistent from one night to the next. Because, of course, at home, he's with Bill Worrell and Clyde Drexler. On the road, he's with Craig Ackerman. But regardless, Matt is always there. So certainly, he's a very informed voice, knows the X's and O's well from a basketball perspective, having been a player himself. But more than that, he's one of the only guys that is literally with them on a day-in, day-out basis. He and Craig Ackerman are some of the only guys that are traveling with them, see them off the court. So not only are they at all games, all 82, but they also get to interact with these guys. They know what their personalities are like. So they give you the most balanced look at not just the Rockets on the floor, but off the court as well. So that's why it's a joy to get to pick his brain. And the reason we're doing this before the game, well, it's the only day that the Rockets are home this week. They just wrapped up a trip to two Eastern teams, Detroit and Chicago, Saturday and Monday. Then tomorrow they go to the West Coast because they're playing Phoenix on Friday and the Clippers on Monday. So it's a brief stop here in Houston. Matt was nice enough to carve out some time in his schedule for me. And I'm always a big fan of in-person interviews rather than over the phone. Because, well, the audio quality is better, but more importantly than that, it's just a much more free-flowing conversation. He knows when he can interject, I can see when I can interject. It just makes more for a natural rhythm and cadence to the conversation and the flow, as opposed to when you're on the phone and you're sort of guessing when the other person is about to take a breath, when you can interject, when you should let them go. So these in-person interviews, those are my favorite. Matt was nice enough to carve out some time in his schedule for me. And before the game, it's about the only time that we can do that. The good news is that even though we don't have tonight's game to factor in just yet, there's plenty of positive stuff to talk about with this basketball team. Because the Rockets enter, for the first time in a while, feeling pretty good about themselves, in my opinion. They've won three of their past five games, and that's largely been without James Harden, who remains out with a grade 2 hamstring strain. He's missed the past four games altogether, and even though he played 41 minutes in that Lakers game, that New Year's Eve win that snapped the five-game losing streak, at the same time, he left with a minute left in regulation and the Rockets down three, so they had to turn the tide and win that one largely without him. And then, of course, these past four games, he hasn't been there. Yet even with his absence, and it's a huge absence, the MVP frontrunner not being there, the Rockets have won three out of five games, and two of the three they've won going away. The games in Chicago on Monday night, in Orlando last Wednesday, both by huge margins. The 116-107 win in Chicago, the final score doesn't even do it justice because the Bulls went on a completely inconsequential 10-0 run to end that game. The Rockets, they dominated on the interior. They out-rebounded the Bulls by 14. Clint Capella, 15-16, just dwarfed his counterpart, Robin Lopez, who had 2-1. On the perimeter, Chris Paul and Eric Gordon each had 24 points and 9 assists. Gerald Green had another great game off the bench with 22 points. So the Rockets, they're playing well individually and collectively. Again, coming off that five-game losing streak, they've won three out of five. They've also gotten two big wins in there, and of their two losses, one of them came without James Harden and two of the Golden State Warriors, who are about as good of a basketball team as there ever has been. So certainly that's a pretty understandable loss just from a talent perspective. So all in all, are the Rockets back yet? No, they're not the juggernaut they were when they won 14 in a row and 20 out of 21, and they're not even going to start back on that path until you get your full cast back, including James Harden, including Luke Bamute. So no, the mid-December Rockets, they're not back yet. But for the first time in a while, you can certainly see some bright spots and sort of talk about those trends and what it may mean going forward, because I would say these trends without James Harden are especially important, because with James having a grade 2 hamstring strain, it's probably going to be absent, I would say, a minimum of 10 more days, and Luke probably missing another week or so himself. So these trends we've seen lately, it's a good time to kind of pick Matt's brain, see what he's seeing, and, well, see if he's also seeing some things that we haven't picked up yet. So he's going to do that in just a moment when he gets set up here, but while we are getting Matt ready, I do want to acknowledge our awesome friends and partners over at Draft App, because without their support, we would not be able to bring this show to you as frequently as we do, the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. And folks, if you play fantasy basketball, there's no reason for you not to be playing Draft. It is by far my favorite fantasy site, because in addition to all the obvious benefits, you've had more than a million people try it, your odds are 80% better, there's a certain simplicity to it as well. You can play in a real-life NBA draft pretty much any moment and be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. It's really that simple. You play, you win, and you get paid. And there's just such a high degree of customization. You can play in the Locked On Fantasy Draft with other Locked On Podcast Network listeners and hosts if you want. But you can also play in some larger or smaller drafts. There's a draft pretty much to suit whatever your preference, and they fill out every second. And from there, folks, the draft is done in under 5 minutes, and you don't even have to worry about setting your lineup. If there's an injury, Draft will take care of that for you. It's just a very seamless process. So if you gain any insight from listening to Matt Bullard or anyone else on Locked On Rockets or across this network, why not try and monetize it? And if you do that, to me, Draft is by far the best place to do it. The best part of it, of course, as my listeners here at Locked On Rockets, y'all all get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit. That's if you use the promo code LORockets. From there, you get a free $3 ticket to try the service. And folks, Draft is so confident that you will like their service that they are offering Locked On Rockets listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100 if, for any reason, you are not satisfied with their service. So to take advantage of those specials, just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play for free right now with me. Use the promo code LORockets and your first game will be on the house. All right, now jumping back into the program, I'm joined by Matt Bullard, his first time on Locked On Rocket. Matt, how's it going, buddy?
It's going well, and I'm excited to be on Locked On Rockets because David Locke is one of my buddies. He's one of my ski buddies. We do a lot of snow skiing together, and we hook up in Utah, and so I've been aware of what he's been doing around the country and around the sports world, and the fact that you're doing Locked On Rockets, I'm super stoked to be with you.
Well, I appreciate it. We've always loved your support for the show, and of course, I'm sure it's a busy week for you because, geez, you've been out East Coast for two games. Now you're about to go to the West Coast for, what, Phoenix Friday, LA Monday. So, yeah, one day in Houston. Full disclaimer, as I said leading off the show, we're recording this right before the Rockets-Blazers game. So if anything dramatic happens to invalidate our statements, that's our blanket immunity before we get into it. But, Matt, I'll lead off. My comments leading off the show, they've won three of their past five games, coming off the five-game losing streak. And certainly you're not going to say that the Rockets are back to the form they were in mid-December, 14 in a row, 20 of 21, until you get, you know, at a bare minimum, James Harden, Luke Bamute back, your full cast. But does it feel at least like things have stabilized because you've won three out of five, including, you know, the last four without James Harden at all? Two of the wins, Orlando and Chicago, by pretty healthy margins. And one of your losses was to a Golden State team who, let's just be honest, is great. You can't, right. You almost don't even count that because of how elite they are. So I know there's still a lot to be proven defensively. You've got to get the injured pieces back. But does it at least feel like they're in a better place now than they were maybe 10 days ago?
Yeah, I think when you look at this Rockets team and you realize that James Harden is an MVP candidate, probably leading the MVP race before he got hurt, and then you try to take him off the roster and say, okay, now what are you going to do with the Rockets? How well are they going to be playing? And I think when you look at the Rockets offensively, obviously the Rockets are the second best team in the league behind Golden State, and the Rockets offense doesn't fall off quite as much as you would think with James Harden coming out, because you have Chris Paul to pick up some slack.
Yep.
But defensively really is where the Rockets are really falling off, and that started before James got hurt, really.
Sure.
And you take a look at the month of January, The Rockets' defensive rating is number 14 in the league. That follows the trend of their defense falling off, and that's really where the Rockets have to really, when they're playing without James Harden, they have to be better defensively. They have to be able to limit the other team's scoring chances so that the Rockets can withstand losing 32 points a game from James Harden. And you mentioned Luke Bamute. That's really the key, I think, is trying to get him back in the Rockets lineup, because he's so good defensively. He's so flexible defensively. You can play him anywhere you need to in the lineup. He can guard guys 1 through 5. And the Rockets defensively, what they're doing this year, when they're switching everything, they really need a guy like Luke Bamute back in the lineup to help their defense.
I know you watched him work out in Detroit and Chicago Saturday and Monday on that road trip. Saturday, I think he told you, 7 to 10 days? So you're still anticipating, I know you don't know until he's cleared, but are we possibly within a week now? Are we getting close?
Well, so Luke has a dislocated right shoulder, and,
yep.
And I've had a dislocated shoulder before. Mine was my left shoulder, and I know what the pain is like coming back from that injury. The problem is it's his right shoulder, and that's his shooting shoulder.
Yep.
And so it's different than if it would have been his left shoulder. He could be out there right now playing defense.
Sure.
With the injury the way it is, they could tape it up. They could limit his range of motion, and he'd be just fine defensively. But the way the Rockets play and him having to be able to knock down three-point shots, that's a whole different animal. And so when I talked to him a few days ago, I was getting the point of view of the player. And,
sure.
And the player's point of view is, yeah, I'm going to get back as soon as I'm good to go. I can play tonight. But the doctors have different parameters of how they decide when you're going to be able to come back. So let's hope that Luke is right, that he'll be back in a week to 10 days. But, again, that's just talking to him. And he's actually been looking pretty good out there before the games warming up. So let's hope that he's able to stay in some sort of shape. Because it is a shoulder injury, not a leg injury. And so let's hope when he does come back, he's in pretty decent shape.
Flip side, it looked like a pretty good day for James here at Shootaround. He was out there. Of course, there are lots of TV guys. They got video clips of him. I guess none of us would be surprised that James is on the short end of a timetable. But, based on your experience, I know there's no guarantees. But if a guy's out there, he's in his workout gear, he's going through Shootaround. Mike D'Antoni said at Shootaround today that he thought it was a matter of days. Is it reasonable to get James back next week, which would be somehow short of 3 weeks?
That would be spectacular. And I saw the same thing that you saw at Shooting Around. The James is out there shooting, looking pretty good. His rhythm looked pretty good. He looked pretty bouncy, which is surprising for having a grade two, tear in your hamstring. And so let's hope that he's a fast healer. Let's hope that he can get back sooner rather than later. But also let's say that hamstring injuries are treated differently now than they used to be. They've got the PRP injections, where they take your own blood and they spin it and they get the platelets out of there and they inject it right into the area where it's injured, and it helps your body heal faster. So let's hope that the doctors are doing everything they can, and that James is a fast healer and he's able to get back sooner rather than later, because, to be honest, the Rockets are just treading water until he gets back.
Yeah, and I think, the schedule for the next 3 games is fairly manageable, knock on wood. We'll see what happens tonight. But then, it gets real difficult in a hurry towards the end of this month. You got that 2-game homestand. When you come back here, you finish up Monday in L.A., you come back with the T-Wolves and the Warriors. So I think in an ideal world, if you'd have him available for one or both of those games, that would be the perfect scenario. And again, 2.5 to 3 weeks, it's still a long time, but when you consider the magnitude of the tear, it'd be a pretty miraculous recovery. But all that said, we've seen how few games that James has missed over the years, so I guess none of us should be surprised. In the interim, though, of course, you've got at least 3 more games, I would say, without James at a bare minimum. And two of the guys that definitely picked up the slack in the short term have been Chris Paul and Eric Gordon. And a couple of things that have stood out to me about Chris and Eric that I want to get your take on is how well they have stepped up what I would consider the secondary parts of their game. Because without James out there to deflect attention, defenses are going to focus 100% on what they do well. With Chris, that's his distribution. With Eric, that's his shooting, his attacking. With Eric, he was averaging 1 assist per game the 14 games before losing James. Since then, 6, 7, 7, and 9. With Chris, he's had a few scoring outbursts in there, but generally, you know how Chris is. He's comfortable to have the 15 and 10 game as long as the team wins. Whereas 2 of the last 3 games, he's had 26 points, he's had 24. So be it Chris as a scorer, Eric as a facilitator, I guess it's kind of a reminder that even though, when James is on the court, they're not the number one option, these are still some spectacular NBA players.
Yeah, and I think Mike D'Antoni said it best in that when James is out, now everybody else has got to pick up their game, and this is a chance for Chris Paul to really get a good feel for Rockets offense. It's really a chance for Chris to be out there running the entire offense himself and not having to worry about deferring to James Harden. And you know, remember, Mike D'Antoni, he's an offensive genius. And Steve Nash, when he was playing for Mike D'Antoni, he was back-to-back MVP.
Sure.
You know, and so this is a chance for Chris Paul now to play for an offensive genius like Mike D'Antoni and really get a feel for playing in an offense that has space. And that's something that's totally different for Chris Paul. But when he was with the Clippers, there was no space in their offense. It was a standard NBA offense.
Especially not with the bigs.
Right, right.
Here. Yeah.
And so now you get Chris in here into Mike D'Antoni's offense, and it's a different way to play. It's a different style where there's a lot more space to operate inside the arc. And the way the Rockets play, Chris Paul has really embraced it. I got some numbers here that when 57% of the time, 57% of Chris Paul's assists go to three-point shots.
Mm.
That's the second best in the league behind James Harden.
Yeah.
Chris Paul's assists to the mid-range, only 2.5% of his assists go to mid-range shots. And that's dead last in the NBA, which is right below James Harden, who's next to dead last. So when you're talking about Mike D'Antoni's offense, you're talking about trying to get layups first and then trying to shoot threes next and then trying to get to the free throw line and eliminating the mid-range shots. So Chris Paul, in his passing, has totally embraced what Mike D'Antoni's offense is all about. So his passing is very similar, and Chris has also been eliminating some mid-range shots from his offensive arsenal as well. So now Chris is learning how to be more efficient, and that's really where Mike D'Antoni is head and shoulders above everybody else, is how efficient his offense is. So we're talking about Chris's strength, his passing, but also now with James Harden being out, he's got to score more, which he's been doing.
Yep.
And then we go to Eric Gordon, and we talk about Eric Gordon is the type of guy that he can, if he's playing with two superstars, he's going to be a really good third guy, right? But he's being asked to score more now
and create more,
and to create more too. And so he's been tremendous in the first quarters. Eric Gordon, number three in the league at field goal percentage in the paint in the first quarter.
Ooh, that's an interesting stat.
Yeah,
which shows how well he's finishing.
Right, and then you take it all the way into the restricted area, and he's number four in the league in field goal percentage in the restricted area in the first quarter. So he's getting off to great starts. He's attacking the rim, and that's one of the things where Eric is not shooting the three ball quite as well as he has in his career. So he's, instead of just continuing to jack up threes that he's not making, he's been attacking the rim, which is the first thing that Mike D'Antoni's offense is asking these players to do, is get all the way to the rim if you can. So six drives a game for Eric Gordon over the last four games, which is double what he normally does when James Harden is on the floor. So you see two guys right there who have really picked up their games, and the advanced numbers bear that out. So I think the Rockets are going to be fine without James, but like we say all the time, you've got to have your MVP back if you're going to compete with Golden State.
Other guy in that backcourt I want to ask you about, everybody's favorite subject these days, Gerald Green. Obviously, he's been a huge lift. We know the three-point shooting. Everybody knows what a great guy he is. Been retweeting the past couple of days, all this stuff that he's been doing on his Instagram for the Hurricane Harvey victims here. Just an amazing story to find a guy like that off the wire. But to talk about the X's and O's of it, one thing that really encouraged me from that Bulls game, Matt, everybody wonders what happens when the three-point shooting cools off, or what happens when teams, you know, adjust to the fact that somehow he's shooting 50% from three and all these ridiculous numbers. In the Bulls game, okay, we saw the Bulls closing out harder. We saw, you know, the scouting report. And what I liked is we saw him kind of adjusting to the adjustment. You saw him taking the ball to the rim more. He even had the two poster dunks. And so what it feels like to me, Matt, is that he's getting his legs underneath them more. I'm sure you remember the first couple of games. There were these lobs that he didn't finish, and I think he said after the game it was because he didn't have his legs under him yet. You know, he's been shooting, he's been stuffed. He's largely been on his couch, you know?
Yeah.
And so now, whatever he loses from the standpoint of eventually cooling off a little bit from three, maybe, you know, teams close out harder, it's good to see that he's got that other gear too. He's plenty athletic. He can drive to the rim as well.
Isn't it interesting how a guy like Gerald Green is unsigned in the NBA this year and yet can come to a team after sitting on his couch for 2 months and average 17 points a game in 25 minutes a game? It's really remarkable what he's been able to do. But what we're talking about is the regression to the mean. You know, he currently is shooting 50% from the three-point line, but he's a 36% three-point shooter over his career. And we're talking about a 10-year career. So 36% is pretty much where you're going to figure he's going to end up at if he's having an average year. So he is going to cool off from the three-point line a little bit. Let's hope it's not a huge drop off to regress to that mean. Let's hope it's a more gradual regression. But the thing that I worry about is when you sit on the couch for 2 months and you're not in an NBA practice for 2 months, your body's not going to be all the way up to where it needs to be. And he talked about his legs dropping out on him in a couple of those earlier games. But what I'm worried about is when he's playing 25 minutes a game, when his body starts to get sore and starts to, and his muscles start to tighten up and he's not quite as loose as he's been because his body's starting to react to this huge load that you're putting on it real quickly. That's what I worry about, is that Gerald's going to go through a stretch where he's really struggling and he loses his rhythm, and let's hope that that does not happen.
Sort of like the rookie wall concept, when you bring somebody in from playing 30, 35 college games to 82. And I guess the hope, if you're the Rockets, is that if that does happen, hopefully that's when you have James and Luke and the full cast back, so maybe you don't have to rely on him as much.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hoping, that you can get those guys back so that when Luke Bamute's back and he's playing his normal minutes and Gerald Green is starting to hit that wall a little bit, you can back Gerald's minutes off a little bit and then plug in, you know, Luke and plug in James and let them kind of get back up to speed. And then when everyone's healthy and you've added Gerald Green to your roster, now you've got more options. So Mike D'Antoni, as a coach, he can look at his team, let's say in March and April, he's got a full roster. He's got more guys than what he has minutes for. And then you can put P.J. Tucker out there, and if P.J.'s not hitting his shots, well, then give Gerald a chance, you know. And if Gerald is hitting his shots, then that night Gerald's going to play more. And so that's kind of, you know, I know Mike D'Antoni likes to have an eight-man rotation, but when you've got more than eight guys who deserve to play, now you've got a chance to go game by game, who's hot, who's not, and try to maximize.
And it potentially lets you mitigate, you know, we're talking couple of minutes about the P.J. Tucker and the Ryan Anderson slump. So I guess it lets you mitigate that down the road if that happens to somebody else. You know, you have another option as opposed to having to throw those guys out there for extended minutes all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, talking about P.J. Tucker, P.J. is in a shooting slump. He's not shooting the ball well at all right now, but P.J.'s not really known as a three-point shooter. So when he's in a three-point shooting slump, he still has to do what he does.
Sure.
And that is be a tough, hard-nosed defender who can guard anybody from 1 to 5 and who rebounds bigger than his size and brings that energy and that hustle every single night. So that's what PJ needs to continue to do as he's going through a shooting slump. But if we talk about Ryan Anderson's shooting slump, you know, Ryan Anderson is a three-point shooter. In fact, the last three years, Ryan Anderson and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are the only three players, in fact, it goes all the way back to the last six seasons. The last six seasons, Ryan Anderson, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson are the only three players in the NBA to have averaged at least 2.5 three-pointers made per game while shooting 38% or better. So Ryan Anderson, over time, has proven that he is a tremendous three-point shooter. So when he's going through a stretch right now where the last 14 games he's not shooting the ball well, He's not going to be able to pick up his defense, pick up his rebounding to make an impact on the game.
Right, there's certain physical limitations there.
Right. So what Ryan has to do is he's got to understand, hey, he's in a shooting slump, but he is one of the best three-point shooters over the last 6 years. So he's got to mentally get through this shooting slump. And everybody goes through it. I went through it as a shooter. You have times when you're just not shooting the ball well. So you got to stay positive.
Yep. See, that's what I want to ask you about, you know, as a former player, how you filter out the noise. Because, you know, we can look at it and say, you know, sample size, you know, just as this is kind of regression to the mean because he started off hot. You know, overall balance of the year, let's point out, he's still 37%. That's still respectable. But at the same time, you get in this funk, you hear the noise all over the place. And how do you, you know, as a player, stay positive without thinking too much about the math, the numbers? Because I'm sure when you're going through that on a game-by-game basis, you're not sitting there thinking, oh, you know, the math says it's going to be okay. You're worried about the fans that are saying, you know, on every Instagram post, Trey Bryant or whatever it is, you know, that kind of thing. So how do you stay in the positive frame of mind to eventually get out of it?
Yeah, and that is the hardest part about being a shooter in the NBA is keeping your mentality positive through times when you're going through
especially
a slump.
Especially, I'd imagine, a guy like you or Ryan where, you know, shooting is the number one tool in your toolbox.
Right, yeah. And so I always go back to the reason why I was such a successful three-point shooter is because I played for Rudy Tomjanovich. And your coaching is very important to being a good shooter. Now, when I was out there, let's say I was going through a shooting slump and I would pass up shots because I didn't have the confidence that I could make it. So when the ball is coming to me and I had an open shot and I should have shot it, and instead of shooting it, I passed it to Mario Elie or Robert Horry or somebody else.
Yep.
Rudy would tell me, he goes, shoot the ball. Your job is to shoot the basketball. If you're not shooting it, you're not helping me. So what Rudy would tell me is, you shooting an open shot and missing it is better than passing it up. And so when you play for a coach like Rudy, who was a shooter himself, who understands that you can't jump on a shooter. And so the opposite of that would be, you know, you're playing for a coach, and if you miss a shot, the coach pulls you out of the game for missing a shot.
Then you're going to press.
Right, then you're going to press. Then your mentality is going to be, oh, crap, now I'm going to get pulled out of the game if I miss a shot. So that's the worst way you can coach a shooter.
Yeah.
And so Rudy used to coach me where if I was missing shots, he would tell me to keep shooting. Because that's the only way you're going to get out of a slump is to continue to shoot the basketball. You got to see that ball go in, and then your confidence is going to go up. And Mike D'Antoni's the same way. Mike understands that you can't coach a shooter by yanking him out of the game or yelling at him when he misses, that everybody's going to miss shots. You know, Ryan Anderson, let's say he's a 40% three-point shooter. That means he makes four out of 10, right? Mm. But that also means he misses six out of 10. So he's going to, even when he's at his all-time best, 40%, he's still going to be missing more shots than he makes. So that's where the mentality of a shooter really comes in. You have to stay confident even after misses.
Yeah, and I think Ryan, in particular, is a guy, he knows it, and you could see it on his face, the relief when he hit the one in Chicago. And I want to bounce this theory off of you. I put this out on Twitter the other night, but I think one of the best things you can do, and I just want your take as a former player, when you're in a funk like that, is if you can play in what I consider some low-leverage minutes. We saw in Chicago when the Rockets had comfortable leads for the majority of that game, it got hairy for a little bit. Bulls took that three-point lead midway through the third, but the Rockets responded pretty quickly. But PJ went 2 of 5. Ryan hit that big three. We saw the, oh my God, I made one reaction, you know, that the AT&T cameras got so well. But I would think that, you know, if the game is tight, which unfortunately with all the injuries, you've had a lot of those lately, you know, you might be, you know, if you're Ryan or you're PJ, less reluctant to shoot if you feel like you're out of it, because, you know, if you miss, you feel like you're harming the team. Flip side, you know, if you're Chris, Eric, one of these other stars, you know, you might be a slight bit hesitant to pass to one of those guys because you feel it's on you. However, if you can play, you know, through some bigger margins, which is what thankfully they've been able to do against Orlando and Chicago, then you get for those guys some low leverage minutes. And to me, it feels like maybe those low leverage minutes are a better chance to break the slump.
Absolutely. That's a great point. When you're out there playing, when your team has a double digit lead, the pressure on the shots isn't quite
so big.
Free. You're freer. You know, if you miss, it's not as big of a deal. If it's a tight game with 2 minutes left, then those misses really are more magnified for sure. But you're right. Definitely getting somebody who's in a slump out, you know, on the floor playing in minutes where it's not quite as tight, that's a good way to do it. But also, I always found just playing 3-on-3 in practice.
Sure.
You know, and the Rockets don't practice a lot. Most NBA teams don't do a lot of practicing during the NBA season. So when you're a guy like Ryan Anderson and you're not shooting it well, yeah, you can get out there and you can shoot as many jumpers in practice as you can. But the better way to do it is like in a 3-on-3 situation where you're actually moving and guarding and rebounding and passing and dribbling and then shooting. It's more game-like.
Yeah, and to that point, I noticed that Mike D'Antoni had a shooter on today, which they've largely canceled, not entirely, but largely this year. And maybe, you know, of course, they haven't been home much. They haven't seen this gym much at all because of all the road games in January. But I think for Ryan in particular, because everybody knows, you know, his home versus road splits, which, you know, I agree, are generally kind of flukish. But, you know, it's a good idea for Ryan and everybody else to just get in that gym, maybe see some shots go through the bucket. Matt, before we finish off, one more subject I haven't touched on. I can't believe you mentioned, given we've been through this whole 20 minutes without even discussing Clint Capela, but I want to throw him and Chris Paul in the same equation, because beyond beyond Clint playing well, which obviously he did, 15 and 16, two blocks against Robin Lopez, which, by the way, that encouraged me on so many levels, because Robin Lopez, that 7 foot, 280 pound guy, that's the kind of guy that in years past that he struggled against. But you could tell Monday his added strength, his added stamina, that paid off. But both of those guys, Clint Capella and Chris Paul, came off injuries that can be pretty tricky to navigate long term. You know, Clint, you know how a big man with his feet, you know how that can go. Chris coming off the groin injury, and it just seemed like because of what happened with James Harden, Rockets fans almost forgot about those injuries. It was almost like out of necessity, we're going to throw you back in, sink or swim. And, you know, there's been so much focus on the guys who aren't out there, James and Luke. We let up talking about that. To me, it's a really good sign that both of those guys, Chris and Clint, you threw them out there, you know, starting with the New Year's Eve game, coming off of injuries that can be pretty, you know, concerning. And yet, over the past 10 days, not only have they played, you know, just gotten through it, they played well. And you look at, you know, in Chicago, Clint played 34 minutes, Chris played 36. To me, it's a pretty encouraging sign that both of those guys, you know, I know, you know, you talk about who isn't out there, but those two guys looked as healthy as they have in some time.
Yeah, that's a good point because, you know, with Chris's adductor strain, that's one of those injuries where you could go out there and you could play 20 minutes and be fine, but then you go out there and play 35 minutes and all of a sudden, boom, it snaps again and then you're right back to square one and you have to sit out. So, yeah, I'm with you on that, that I'm really excited that Chris has been able to come out and looks 100% healthy and doesn't seem to have any lingering issues with the adductor strain. And then with Clint, with his heel, you know, that's one of those things where if you have a heel bruise and you're running on it constantly, it's never going to heal.
Right.
So the fact that he got hit in the face and had an orbital fracture and he had to miss a couple games there, that let his heel a little bit more. And so I would say I agree with you that both those guys are looking 100% and Rockets desperately need those guys to be 100% while James Harden is out.
Right, because with Clint, there's obviously no one else in that front court that can replace what he does. You know, PJ at times, when he's just so small, he's not going to give you the same dimension. Ryan, you know, he's a space five, but there are defensive limitations. And Nene and Tarik Black, they just don't give you the same element of verticality, I guess you want to call it.
Yeah, so the vertical spacing, yeah.
Clint's pretty essential. One final thing I'll throw out. Tarik Black, has he shown you something in the past week? It's been, I would say, it was a slow start to the year for him in part because he missed most of training camp with the injury. But, you know, you look at the Detroit game, he had, what, I think like 13 and 6. He made all the shots from the field. Chicago wasn't quite as smooth. But as far as finding another, maybe a younger option than Nene, because you know Nene can't play every game, have they at least seen some encouragement in the past week in terms of the backup bids?
Yeah, I think Tarik, with the minutes that he's been forced to play with Nene being out, and Nene's got a knee contusion, so he's missed the last three games, and I don't know what his status is for tonight, but you got to have that third center on this roster when you have Nene as your backup center, because Nene's 35 years old. I love what Nene brings to this team, his toughness, his heart, his passion to win. But he's 35 years old and he can't do it every single night anymore. I know what my body felt like when I was 35. So it's just not possible. You can't recover fast enough as you get older to be able to be effective every single night. So the Rockets are, they need that third center spot to be a good player. Remember last year the Rockets had Montrezl Harrell, who I thought played that role really well last year for the Rockets. And this year he's playing spectacular for the Clippers. He's really having a good year for the Clippers. So Tarik Black's got big shoes to fill in that Montrezl Harrell role, and Tarik's been getting better. But the thing about Tarik that I think, he's so smart that I think sometimes he overthinks things, you know? And
that's
so
good point. Because, yeah, he's one of the best interviews there is, an incredibly insightful guy.
Well, he's got a master's degree from, you know, he graduated from Memphis and then went to Kansas and got a master's degree. I mean, the guy is just he's super intelligent. But sometimes you can be too smart where your brain kind of talks yourself out of things or whatever.
You're overthinking rather than acting.
Right. And so in the NBA, you can't be out there on the floor thinking. You got to be out there reacting. And so what Tarik's been able to do over this last five games when he's gotten more extended minutes is he's been able to get out on the floor and find a rhythm and find kind of a comfort level with Chris Paul on the pick and rolls and be out there just playing instead of thinking about stuff so much. So I think the Rockets are going to be fine with Tarik Black, but the bottom line is Clint Capella cannot get injured. If Clint misses extended games this year, that's a huge blow to the Rockets.
Yep, absolutely. Matt, thank you so much for the time. We'll end it there. I guess, what, at Bull50 on Twitter is the best way? If for some reason people aren't following you already. Yeah, we've had some fun Twitter exchanges now that we've gotten in the same Twitterverse. Yep. I think we both have some fun times at the official's expense. So,
what do you think about my idea of the fourth official, the video ref at the press table, having the ability to look at all the camera angles that are in the arena and being able to correct calls in real time. What do you think about that?
I think that's a fabulous idea. To me, the single biggest issue that needs to be corrected, well, there are two. First off, at the situation that happened in Boston, you should always be able to insulate yourself. You know, just in any profession, you want to have one more than you actually need. That put it on full display to the league that two officials just does not work. It wasn't just about the last minute of the game. The entire game was poorly called, going both ways. So, you know, you always want to staff up so that if there is an emergency, you know, you can at least survive. But beyond that, to me, the replay system is the biggest thing that I think you can fix. Because I think right now, the NBA, they put their toe in there, which is nice. You know, you do want to embrace technology. But it's a little bit of a problem in that, you know, when you have some calls that are reviewable and some that aren't. I'll give you an analogy from that Boston game, and I'm sure you've seen from me on Twitter. The call that frustrates me more than any other, Matt, it's late in the game. You have a player driving towards the basket. We saw this Christmas Day with LeBron and Durant. Or in the Boston game, it's Harden against Al Horford. And you end up with a scenario. They go inside. There's a little bit of contact. The ball gets stripped. And what ends up happening over the course of 60 years of NBA ball, Matt, and I'm sure you know this, it's what I call a split the difference call, to where, you know, the official isn't quite sure who the ball went off of, but there's probably, you know, there's probably a foul, but it's not so much of a foul that they want to feel like they're putting their thumb on the scale of who should win or lose that game. So they don't want to send it to the free throw line, but they'll say, hey, the defense did not earn a turnover by doing that, especially if there's a little bit of contact. So they'll just give it to the offensive team out of bounds. Well, now what's happened in that, we saw it LeBron against Durant on Christmas, we saw it at the end of the Boston game, is that they can go to the replay booth, but they can only review part of the equation, which is, you know, the out of bounds. You can't review the actual contact. And so that's what frustrates me the most, Matt. And so, yeah, that's why I want to say, put in that fourth ref and make everything reviewable, because I like the technology. You just need to be able, you know, if you're going to do it, then fully embrace it. And honestly, there's enough money. It makes more jobs. To me, it just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and there aren't any better officials anywhere on the planet. You can't go out and get better officials. All the best officials in the world are in the NBA.
Yeah.
So the officiating without technology is not going to get better. You got to use technology
exactly.
to get it better.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to do it other than embracing technology. And they've done it to some extent. It's just now, with anything, you're seeing some cracks in it. And so, yeah, that's the easiest way because, yeah, certainly I don't think at the power, the speed at which current athletes play, it's unreasonable to expect the officials to get every call. I think embracing technology is the best way to do it. Anyway, Matt, thank you so much for the time. Folks, that's Matt Bullard at Bull50 on Twitter. I'm Ben Dubose at Ben Dubose on Twitter. This is Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on the Houston Rockets at Locked On Rockets on Twitter. And folks, don't forget to visit our friends and partners over at the Draft app. They're our sponsors for today. If you go to draft.com or download that Draft app and use the promo code LO Rockets, you can get a free entry into a real money fantasy basketball draft. That includes tonight and tomorrow. Matt, thank you so much for the time. And folks, thank you all for listening. Rockets about to tip off against the Blazers. We'll be talking with you again shortly after the game, right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.